Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us on this great world wide web connecting everyone and everybody. Once again, it is the last three guys to do a podcast back for our 41st edition. I'm John Mordo. We got the whole crew here in the studio today, Leon Brown and Daniel Bolton. As I prepare to take my end of summer break, I will not be in studio next week. And we will be taking the August 11th off as we get ready for football. And speaking of football, that pigskin is in the news once again. Atlanta Falcon training camp is in full swing over at Flowery Branch. And once again, injuries have proven to be the story. Not as bad as we saw last season, but there are some things that we need to talk about heading into the Falcons campaign, which is going to kick off this Thursday night in the Hall of Fame game up in Canton, Ohio, against the Denver Broncos. So, guys, let's just get right into that. Calvin Ridley, he is going to be out for a little bit, as is Duke Riley. Other people getting kind of bumped and bruised. Guys, is this something we should worry about, or is this just a normal training camp exercise, people getting the rust off, and that is when you get the injuries happening?
Serious, you know, and we don't know the severity of Calvin Ridley's injury.
Mm-hmm.
However, you know, anytime a big time hitter like Ridley is injured, yeah, it will show cause of concerns. However, my thing is this: as long as it's happening in training camp, he's a go for week one,
right?
September the 8th, I believe. As long as he's ready for those games, then we're good to go. And that's that game at Minnesota, so you know, we'll be good, we'll be ready to go for that particular game. So Duke Riley, this might be something serious for Duke, because Duke is like one of those who is still looking for the improvement.
Right.
You know, he struggled a lot last year, especially with coverage, with pass coverage, and just the basics at the linebacking position. He did struggle. I mean, let's just go ahead and lay it out there. But this is the time for him to – this was really kind of a bad time for him to not be down, because he needed as many reps as possible in the preseason. So hopefully his doesn't affect him
mm-hmm.
as much. I want to see a lot more out of him, though, in the preseason, to see where we go with him in the regular season.
Are we now at the point with what happened last year that we're kind of overanalyzing every little bump and bruise?
Of course, because look who got hurt last year. The
right.
Who's who of players for the Atlanta Falcons got hurt last year. The top three defensive players, arguably, well, I mean, if you don't count Grady Jarrett, but,
right.
I mean, arguably were hurt. Three out of the top four, we'll say. Rico Allen, Keanu Neal, Deion Jones. Those are not just regular names. These are Atlanta Falcon household names. These are three guys that are Pro Bowl, they have Pro Bowl potential. In fact, I think the year before, Deion Jones went to the Pro Bowl, and him and Keanu Neal was in the Pro Bowl as alternates, but they were able to get there. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, these are heavy hitters, man. We don't have those three in the lineup. You see what happened.
Right.
We went to the we lost. No, we didn't go to the playoffs last year. Did we not?
No,
we didn't. So, I mean, when you miss out on that opportunity, it's because you missed those three guys. You know, the year before that, we had those three guys. And we made it to the playoffs, and we were the only team to go to back-to-back playoffs in the NFC the year we beat the Rams and, of course, lost to the Eagles in that heartbreaking defeat.
And you guys played the Super Bowl champs to a standstill. I mean, it came literally down to the last play
of the game. Yeah. And you got it to the right guy. Matt Ryan to Julio Jones, and the catch just couldn't be made. I mean, but, you know, that's whatever. You know, we look on to this year and we look on to this season. I mean, guys, if this Falcons team is healthy, they're right in the thick of things. I think a lot of people have them as like in the top 10 as favorites, you know, one of the favorites to actually win the Super Bowl. So,
right.
I mean, a healthy Falcons team is a dangerous team.
Yeah, the NFC right now reminds me of the NBA Western Conference this year.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, I mean, you have
it's loaded.
Yes, it's going to take. It's safe to say that you're going to have to go at least the bare minimum 10-6 this year to make the NFC
mm-hmm.
playoffs.
Right.
Maybe even 11-5.
Right.
You know, the NFC is I mean, do we call it wide open or we just call it competitive?
I think call it competitive.
I say both.
Yeah.
I think it's both. I don't think it's a clear-cut favorite. That's why I can't wait for our show when we start making these predictions.
Right.
To see where everybody is at that time. You know, and that's just the funny part about it. In the AFC, I mean, you may have about a good five teams that you can honestly say are favorites to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC. But in the NFC, I mean,
yeah, you got some good teams. It's going to be some good teams that aren't going to make the playoffs this year.
Yeah,
right.
Very good teams that are not going to make the playoffs this year.
Because we got to look at the NFC East with Dallas, Philly. You know, those teams right there are, you know, Philly is, you know, with Carson Wentz making his return and him actually may get a crack at the playoffs and with the addition of DeSean Jackson to the roster.
Philly is the favorite, actually.
And Alshon Jeffries. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, then you have the Dallas. I'm sure that the businessman that is Jerry Jones, he will work that out with Zeke.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
You know. Because, you know, as we know, Jerry Jones, he stated recently in the news that he's been to 30 training camps and he does not have 30 left. So he's contemplating on his mortality as of late. So something tells me that they're going to get that contract done with Zeke. But there's going to be a growing trend that's going to be developing with the NFL in the coming future. Because as it states now, you got these NFL running backs are on these rookie deals like 4 years. And, you know, NFL running backs age like milk. So, you know.
You got to get your money before you're 30.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you get these rookie deals and you're about 25, 26. Go for the max deal. Go for as much as you can. And at the end of that second deal, you're done. Yeah. And that's really how it is right now. You're talking about the teams that will contend for the NFC. I'm going, let's see, we're going in the first in the South, Atlanta, New Orleans. Then we're going to go in the East, Dallas and Philadelphia.
I would throw Washington in there.
You would throw
Don't sniff at the Washington Redskins. Dwayne Haskins, he might get that job. So he might have something to prove here. The Giants passed him up. So
well, our Washington will make a half.
Okay.
Well, Washington will make a half. Then in the West, you've got the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
Do we see anybody else continuing for the Rams? Do the Seahawks have one year left? Have something left?
Whenever you have Russell Wilson on your team, Bobby Wagner just got signed up. You count the Seahawks in there.
They got 10 wins in them.
And then in the North, of course, Chicago, Green Bay, Minnesota's a half?
Yes, Minnesota.
Okay.
Minnesota definitely you put in there. Going back to the West. Guys, watch Frisco. Watch San Francisco.
They're rebooting.
Yeah.
Now that they got Jimmy Garoppolo hopefully back for the entire year.
And they got one of our guys, too, Tevin Coleman.
Right, so, Tevin Coleman. You
know, if he's healthy, he could be very deadly in the backfield.
So then the also-Rans, you got Detroit, the Giants, Tampa, Carolina, Arizona.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, you can pick. Carolina is always an anomaly every year, but Carolina runs as good as far as Cam Newton can take them. So,
I don't put anything past them. I think they got 10 wins in them as well. They've with the exception of last year due to Cam Newton's shoulder injury, I'm pretty sure that that Carolina will be competitive. Is Tampa Bay going to allow James Winston to start this year? I'm pretty sure they will.
Right.
You know, now it's all about what are they going to do this year. I mean that we've been asking that same question about Tampa Bay for the past like five years.
Exactly.
5 years.
You know, we don't know what, like I said, Tampa Bay's been in this kind of cycle of promise and they never deliver. They're almost like the Tennessee Volunteers in that regard.
Exactly. Yeah, like what are they gonna do? Up 8-8. Up 7-9, 6-8, 6-10. Oh, okay. But you know, one team that's going to make it a little bit of interesting on what they're going to do is that team in the Midwest. You know, they're named after a color.
Oh yeah, are you talking about the brown?
The only team named after a color.
Yeah, the brown. Even though technically they're not named after a color, they're named after Paul Brown.
Paul
right?
Brown.
Yeah. They're named after the owner of another team.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either
Paul Brown.
Either or. They have some expectations. I mean, think about what last time.
They were one of the five teams, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
That I thought of,
too.
Yeah, my five teams, I would have had New England,
Cleveland, KC, San Diego,
Pittsburgh.
You have Pittsburgh.
I have Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh.
We're missing.
New England.
No, we're missing
Jacksonville.
Somebody to come out of the South. Houston. Jacksonville
probably will with their defense. Indianapolis as well. So Indianapolis with
they're always there.
And they probably have the best. They probably have the best linebacker in the AFC in Darius Leonard. So, you know.
It's a lot going on.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it, man. It's football is back.
The Ravens. Back. We forgot about the Ravens. Did we put Baltimore in that thing?
I don't know.
The question is, has anybody found out how to solve Lamar Jackson?
That's the question. Where is Jackson going to
be? Where is Jackson going to be? Has he improved himself as a passer, as an NFL passer as well? He could pass the ball okay, but is he a legit passer? Like, is he a Pat Mahomes? See, now we have to start adding him up to that standard because Pat Mahomes, remember, can run the ball and he can pass the ball. He didn't throw 50 touchdowns by luck last year.
So Lamar Jackson, whom we, you know, is it barbecue? Is he going to be validated?
Exactly.
We don't know. This is the question.
Verified or petrified?
Or petrified.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the whole question with the Ravens. Is Lamar Jackson going to be able to take over that team?
And New England and Kansas City are the co-favorites to come out of the AFC. So that's
unfortunately, you know.
But you know, that's just funny. I look forward to seeing our predictions.
Yeah.
And does Joe Flacco have what it takes to succeed in Denver?
Or will this be his final chapter?
Yeah.
Flacco down in Denver. You know, it's like, will he go out the same way? You know, it kind of reminds me of Joe Flacco to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. Comes from the same it's almost interesting. Remember a guy by the name of Johnny Unitas?
Yes.
Yeah.
At the time played for the Baltimore Colts.
Yeah.
Like Joe Flacco played for the Baltimore Ravens. But then once Johnny Unitas lost his flair,
mm-hmm.
he wound up in San Diego.
Yeah.
In the AFC West.
Yep.
And Joe Flacco, once he was replaced, winds up in the AFC West. In Denver. I mean, that's just so he's gonna look so out of place. In a Denver Broncos uniform.
You know what I think we should do next week? I think that we should have questions for each division. Like, what are we looking for out of each division? You know what I'm saying? It's going to be too much to ask for all 32 teams. you know?
Yeah, we're not going to be able to get through it all.
Let's go with the division. Like, you know, what questions would you like answered out of the NFC East or something like that. We should do that next week.
Okay.
Speaking of which, we were talking about the NFC West, right?
Yeah.
We spent about 30 seconds on it.
Yeah, believe it's the Rams.
Okay.
And then you can't discount Seattle because they have Russell Wilson.
Right.
We have to see what Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be capable of for a full season in San Francisco. And in Arizona, it's Larry Fitzgerald and nobody else.
Wow.
Well, Kyler Murray's there.
Kyler Murray, but he's not going to come in that first year.
Yeah.
He's not going to do it the first year.
If he does, I'd be surprised.
John got it right.
Make bold predictions out of this. I guess we can make bold predictions on what we
see. Oh, Larry Fitzgerald. How come he hasn't requested a trade, man?
Because
he likes it.
He likes it.
Fitz has a home out there and everything, so you know, he's established himself out there. So.
Yeah, he must have post football plans. Like he must go. You know how John Stockton and Karl Malone opened up a dealership in Utah.
he's probably getting involved in like a solar panel dealership up there, or maybe a hot tub dealership or something like that.
There you go.
But yeah, he likes it. He's good with the community. So you know he's. I haven't seen any indication that he's the least bit not happy out there.
Exactly.
I haven't seen anything. That is kind of a surprise.
He's went through a lot with that team. So,
yeah.
No
one should question his loyalty out there.
We at the beginning of the year, and of course the Hall of Fame game starts it off. So it would be it should be an honor to do this before. Salute the Hall of Fame class of 2019, man. I mean, Champ Bailey, Pat Bowlen, Gil Brandt, Tony Gonzalez, Ty Law, Kevin Maui, Ed Reed, Johnny Robinson. Congratulations to those guys. They're going to be enshrined Saturday night, next Saturday, actually.
Yep. And we had this debate on why is the game on a Thursday?
Yeah, why is the game on a Thursday? I think the game should end. I think it should end all the festivities on a Sunday.
That makes sense.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. And you end it with the game. So, you know, but, you know, the NFL is changing, and you have to change with the NFL, I guess.
It's the 100th. It's the 100th season.
Right.
And also they had festivities, I think, earlier today and yesterday, actually, because I think the first game in 1920 was yesterday. And Lord knows bad news came out of it for the Bengals. A.J. Green, he's injured his foot. He is out for training camp the soonest they can expect him back, week one. And after what happened to Mr. Green last season, that game with the Falcons that knocked him out, this is another example for Cincinnati, a rebuilding mode. Marvin Lewis finally out. This is a rebuilding mode for the Bengals, and now they're just hit again. This is another team that's kind of like a lot of these NFL teams. They have a quarterback who seems to be good. They try to put people around him, but for some whatever reason, Andy Dalton just can't perform.
Well, you know, I'm looking, when I think of Cincinnati, I think are they going to finish over 6 or under 6 this year?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, last year they did 6-10, fourth in AFC in the AFC East. So I'm thinking to myself,
West,
will they
Central North?
AFC. North. Oh yeah, I'm North. Tripping. North, yeah. North. Okay. Yeah. AFC North. They've kind of been in the basement for the past X amount of years, and I don't see anything changing anytime soon. So the question is, when is Cincinnati going to go to the draft and get them another quarterback?
I thought they were going to do it last year, but there are too many. They decided to stick with Mr. Dalton.
Well, obviously they're sold on Andy Dalton. I don't think they're going to make a move from him.
I think what they've done now is they said, okay, the problem is Marvin Lewis. We got rid of Marvin Lewis. So now this is Andy Dalton's year to prove that he is not the problem.
Right.
Is it Zach Taylor that's in there now as the head coach?
I think it is.
You know what that reminds me of? You know, like politics. There's a great movie that came out back in the day called Traffic.
Yes.
Okay.
In which, you know, Michael Douglas was awarded a certain position, and he was given, you know, some advice. He said,
oh, yeah.
You know, when you're in trouble, why don't you open up this envelope? And says blame everything to his predecessor. Says blame everything on me.
Right,
right.
That's what Marvin Lewis told Andy Dalton. Blame everything on me. He took the blame. He took the heat.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, "You find yourself in trouble again, write another letter."
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's where Andy Dalton's at right now. You know. Yes, they're preparing. It's the writing's on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
If Cincinnati finishes fourth in especially with a hobbled Pittsburgh, I mean, Pittsburgh lost everything, except with the exception of Ben Roethlisberger.
And Mike Tomlin.
And he's on his way out. He's about to write a letter. Hopefully what you're saying is true about the Pittsburgh Steelers,
mm-hmm.
but I'm thinking that Mike Tomlin is in a position where, he can't blame Bill Cowher.
No.
Bill Cowher's, you know, it's like he might be in a position to be writing a letter I think with Ben Roethlisberger, he might be on the way to retirement.
That's another team that needs to draft a replacement, get someone in. And Mike Tomlin, I think he just signed a 1-year extension.
He did.
Oh, okay.
That is correct.
Oh, okay, so the Rooney family, they have a heart, you know. I guess they've been accused of having a soul.
Well, we always do. Well, the Rooneys... Give the Rooneys credit. They are progressive, for lack of a better term. They were the ones who pushed the so-called Rooney Rule that requires that an NFL team interview at least one minority candidate before the head coaching for a head coaching position. They have, although the success of what that has done, the long-term success of that, good or no, that is yet to be debated. But it is there, and that is definitely a step in the right direction. Again, this is going to take us to a conversation that we will have another time. But I give the Rooneys a lot of credit for being on the forefront of trying at least to diversify NFL front offices and NFL coaching staffs. We've actually got excuse me. And there's a lot of leagues where that is moving in interesting directions. You know, the San Antonio Spurs hired a female assistant. And I think somebody else just did.
The Celtics.
Carol Lawson from Connecticut and ESPN. Yeah. So give them credit.
Kudos to Boston for doing that too, right?
Yes. So again, it's give the Rooneys a lot of credit. But yeah, I don't see how they're going to be able to do anything this season especially with everything that happened to them last year. I think they're due for a huge hangover, but you know, that's just what I think. That means absolutely nothing until they get out on the field in week one, and we'll see how they fare in that week one game.
I got a bad joke for you guys.
Well, that's all I know, so.
I got you. Which sport do you think will have a female in a prominent position first?
What do you mean? What do you define as prominent position? Jeannie Buss has been a fixture in L.A. for years. So you mean a head coach?
Yeah.
Head coach.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
What are the basketball first?
It's got to be NBA.
Yeah. So you're saying that in the NBA will have a female head coach?
Out of the four big professional leagues.
Before the major leagues?
Yes.
Yes.
Way before the major leagues. They might not even see a female coach.
No.
They might not even see a female executive.
I wonder, would they even have a female umpire?
They might.
They might.
And they might.
And shout out to our female listeners out there. We do believe in absolute equality. If you listen to Daniel's essay last show, you know, we are not in any way, shape, form, or fashion of sexist, but we are addressing, you know, something that is that really like an unwritten rule, you know what I mean? Like, that's teams like baseball is so conservative.
Yeah.
That's the rule I'm getting to. Like, baseball is so conservative.
Right.
That, for example, when we had the issue of Jason Collins, I think Daniel and I spoke about this years ago when we were doing back in the day.
Yeah.
Where Jason Collins was in the NBA playing for – he came out as the first openly gay professional basketball player.
Sure.
And how that – it sent waves. Mm-hmm. And then you have – the NFL was faced with an openly gay rookie – what was the young man's name? He played linebacker for
– Michael Sear?
Michael Sam.
Michael Sam. Okay, so that was two sports, and you know, like I said, me personally, if I were a player, I'm more so looking at the production.
And of course, there are a lot of players who came out after their playing days.
Absolutely,
right. Like John Amici was one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, John Amici did come out, didn't he?
And there's can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but I do have a friend who's writing a book on him, so I'll be sure to know that later. Mm-hmm. But there's Major League Baseball had the same thing.
Right. See, Major League Baseball is so conservative that, you know, I was watching it was an interview I was watching with Asante Samuel on ESPN, and they were discussing, you know, how would he feel if he knew of an openly gay teammate of his was in the locker room and everything like that. And, you know, he cleverly, you know, answered the questions and everything like that. You know, I'm not, you know, I feel that it's based on production. What you do in your private life is up to you.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm looking at your production.
Right.
Production equals. I apply this. Production equals tolerance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. As far as I'm concerned, but when looking at baseball, which is possibly, I believe, the oldest organized professional sport in the country.
Yes.
Yes.
History.
Yep. 1880s.
1880s, man. 1880s. It's always been, quote unquote, the gentleman's game.
Right.
You know? Right. And they're so conservative that could we even imagine the concept of a female manager in an NFL dugout? I mean, a Major League dugout.
And, you know, and remember how tough it was to even, back in those days, I watched my baseball documentary done brilliantly by Ken Burns almost at least twice a year,
right?
Just to re-up my knowledge and my history on baseball. It's one of the best documentaries that could have ever been written, that could have ever been done, I mean, on film. Ken Burns did this. And when you look at it, remember how long it took for the black athlete to even step foot on the major league scale. You know, I mean, it wasn't until 47 when Jackie Robinson trotted out the first base.
Yeah, almost 100 years into the game, but 80 years into the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
70 probably.
And even just looking at the rules of baseball now, you remember for a long time the designated hitter position and it basically split the lines between, and it still does. It still does to this day. Mm-hmm. Split the lines between the National League and the American League. And the National League, which is the oldest league in baseball history, just never adapted to that designated hitter role.
Right.
Very much frowned upon in the National League.
Yeah, it was frowned upon in the National League, which kept Major League Baseball separated until they started putting in interleague play. And the interleague play didn't come in until what the 2000s?
Recently,
I think it was.
It's a lot. It's longer than you think.
It's longer than yeah.
It's like 2005, 2008.
I want to say the late 90s. Yeah.
Because I remember whenever interleague play was you know, whenever it occurred, it was an announcement.
Right. Yes. But now it's become so in the de rigueur, so normalized, and the first time you had like you know Cubs playing. Now it's Cubs playing the White Sox because you had these natural rivalries.
Yeah.
Giants playing the A's, Dodgers playing the Angels. And now you've got like this season, Dodgers playing Tampa Bay. Just these borderline boring matchups that no one really cares about. They just seem like normal games now.
Right. And you'll still have those Yankees, Mets, and you know.
Yeah.
You'll have those
every year.
You'll have those every year. You know.
So anyway, I'm John Morgo talking with Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown here, the last three guys to do a podcast, talking as we get ready for football and other things going on here in the world of sports. Again, it is July 29th. Football, pro football camps have opened for a majority of squads or maybe one or two outliers. Hall of Fame game this Thursday pitting the Broncos and our Atlanta Falcons. Guys, college camps will open up right after that NFL Hall of Fame game. Georgia State opens up on August 2nd. So college football starting to get a little bit in the air. That talk is going to get louder and louder as we progress through the month. And a couple of interesting things we got on that first season. We got Florida and Miami going to kick things off. Week 0, August 24th. And boy, the only problem I have with this game is that it's just going to be humid central. This is going to be a mired in the. I mean, it's going to be played in the heat of day in central Florida. Temperature's going to be in the 90s. Heat index easily 100, easily 105. And I know the rationale, the draw of having it in the middle of the day because you want that Florida crowd. You want it to be a celebration of Florida football, but boy, at some point, this is just going to be torture for these kids.
Yeah, it's going to be probably in the 90s, say the least, right?
Then the humidity factor.
Yeah, the humidity factor is going to be crazy. I think it's a good game to start off college football. You have two teams that I'm supposed to hate. getting out there in the brutal 90s. I don't hate Miami. I respect them. I love playing them every year. It's just that other team.
Gators.
Yeah, those Gators. But, you know, needless to say, I mean, putting all jokes aside, it's going to be a very interesting matchup between two teams who you expect to be in the conversation, perhaps, especially winning their division at least, or at least headed to their conference championship games. Or what? Now, I'm not going to go as far as to saying national championship because, of course, there are two teams that are just above the rest. And, I mean, you might have three or four other teams behind them, but Alabama and Clemson will be.
Yeah, we know Alabama and Clemson are going to be. Those are going to be the two teams.
They'll be in the thick of things. But I think it's a great week to start off college football. And I believe that week before when we come back from our from that one-week break.
Yep,
the 18th. That might be our day to set up our college football preview show, too. So we're giving you guys a lot of
We're gonna have a lot of college football action for this season. Again, you can catch us in person up in Waleska, Georgia, on August 24th. That day we'll be up there. Weber International taking on the Reinhardt Eagles. The three of us will be up there, and that will be our college football debut. Again, it's gonna be a 1 o'clock game up at the Wilds of Waleska. Ken White Field will be on top of the roof of the press box, and we'll be giving you all the action, breaking down that game as we get into the season again. So even though college football is starting, we much rather probably be watching that Florida Miami game. However, we'll be working college game of our own, kicking off the season, and that'll be a lot of fun as we get going on 2019. We got a lot of great things in store for you, but again, in store for college football, yes, all these storylines are great. All these storylines are very important. Talking about them, but boy, does anybody really expect anything other than Clemson, Alabama when this is settled? Is there a chance that things might get interesting? We've seen this movie before,
uh-huh.
But no matter what happens, no matter strangeness comes our way, no matter how many times a number two seed is a number two ranked team will lose, a number three ranked team will lose. Somebody will pull off a big upset, but at the end of the day, when all is said and done, when the dust is settled, we all believe it will be Clemson and Alabama. And as much as are we at the point where we're just tired of it all, where we would like somebody else to show up?
I think I would, but I mean, they're just so far ahead in the recruiting aspect as well. Mm-hmm. Like Dabo Swinney is probably king of the Southeast. Well, not king of the Southeast because Nick Saban's down there too.
Right.
But they're fighting for superiority in the Southeast and probably the world. Right.
Right. Yeah.
But to answer your question, John, about is there anybody else? It's like in boxing. No pun intended to my last minute, but it's like in boxing. In boxing, you would always give somebody a puncher's chance, right?
Okay.
A fighter's chance, because one punch can beat you. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And you would have to give teams like Ohio State, like Oklahoma, who else?
Yeah, I mean, Notre Dame, Georgia,
LSU.
The usual suspects.
The usual suspects, right? You know, Florida. Those teams deserve that puncher's chance. Because you just never know what could happen. The Auburns of the world. Anybody really in the SEC West has a puncher's chance, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just never know what kind of Cinderella story you might get from another team. You know what I'm saying? Like, Virginia Tech might surprise people this year. Yeah, you just never know. My boys might come back up. Florida State might come back up and have a great season. And stun some people. And get into the college football playoffs, I'm hoping.
Speaking of Cinderella, mm-hmm. You know, well, when is the fairy godmother going to show for Harbaugh in Michigan State?
In Michigan.
Michigan. And for the Wolverines.
And there's another team. You know, Michigan had a great team last year.
Because he was recruited to beat Ohio State and has yet to kind of.
He has yet to do it. He's 0-4?
Yeah.
I believe he is. But he has to break through that ice first. He has to break through that ice first. And if he doesn't, and they have a subpar season, then what do you do?
Yeah. That's what I was wondering with Harbaugh, because they paid him a nice little lump of change.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they extended him, if I'm not mistaken. I think so. They extended Harbaugh. So, but remember, it was kind of crazy. Remember Lloyd Carr, great Lloyd Carr, who – actually, what was it? I think he went on like a 3-year losing streak against Ohio State and Jim Tressel,
mm-hmm.
and they fired him.
Yeah.
You know, and he went, and I think he went to a BCS bowl game that year, but he couldn't get the job done.
And that's what. But you know, with them extending Harbaugh in spite of him making good on his promise to get over the hump,
right?
You know. That's interesting to me.
Because when
you look at Clemson, I'm pretty sure that the boosters and alums, you know, when they're talking to the head coach of Clemson, like, hey, you got that elephant in the room, which is across the street over there called Alabama.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's what you're here for.
Yeah. Right. Right. You're here to beat your rivals. And your expectations actually go up as you meet other expectations.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the game, it goes from difficulty to the difficulty ups every milestone.
Right, right. It's like Willie Taggart when he took over for Jimbo Fisher. Of course, the Florida State faithful were like, hey, man, Jimbo led us to a national championship, and he took us to two college football playoffs.
Right.
Okay. He did that for us.
Right.
Right? He gets us to a New Year's Six Bowl the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years that he was there. Well, Jimbo could coach. Taggart, you have to do the same thing. But, of course, it changes when you get there.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you don't know what kind of recruiting, Taggart does. His coaching style is different from what Jimbo's was. So now you have to – you have to restart with him, right? Mm-hmm. His expectations now, hey, look, in the first 3 years, you need to at least get us 8 wins in one season. You need to beat Florida at least one time that year. Because that's going to always be the expectation.
Right.
You need to at least beat your rival one time that year. One time in your 3 or 4 years that I'm giving you in this block.
Get oh, yeah, that keeps the student body happy.
Exactly. That keeps the alumni and the boosters happy. Beat Florida at least 1 year. Or out of the three teams, you beat either Florida. You can't lose to Florida, Miami, and Clemson all in the same year.
No, you got to at least beat one of them.
You got to beat one of them. He yeah, did not do that last year.
Write a letter.
Yeah, he was out. He did not do that last year. Do I think he can do it this year? Yes, I do.
Yeah, because he's definitely wrote. If it happens again this year, he's going to have to write a letter.
On why? And that, like I said, that I'm not putting Taggart on any kind of hot seat or anything like that. But that just goes for all coaches.
Oh no, his letter.
Harbaugh has to win his conference, has to win his division.
Oh yeah, he has much higher expectations.
Yeah, his expectations are 10 times higher.
Yeah,
and you better beat Ohio State this year. I don't care how you do it, just beat them.
Yeah, Taggart's letter will be to his successor.
Yes,
that when things go wrong, just blame me.
Exactly,
because he's out of here if that happens again. That's a great point.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So that's one thing that we're paying attention to, and I'm just kind of looking around the NCAA college football while you guys were talking about Willie Taggart and the situation up in Michigan, how Mr. Harbaugh needs to beat the Scarlet and Gray this season, because I think his boosters are definitely getting tired of losing to Ohio State as much as they have been, and it is definitely a blemish on Mr. Harbaugh's record that he hasn't done so. I mean, I'm trying to find other games to talk about on that August 24th. There is the game at Hawaii between Arizona and the Rainbow Warriors, but that's not till 10:30. Miami, Florida is a 7:00 kickoff, so that'll help out a little bit. Again, they're playing in College World Stadium in the Camping World Stadium up there in Orlando. And I was talking about the Reinhardt Weber International. That is the only NAIA game on the schedule for that first week. So, and I think this is going to be maybe one of the only games underway at that particular time. There is, I believe I found a contest. We're not going to be the first football game getting underway on the 24th. That honor will be Villanova and Colgate.
And Colgate, yeah.
Then,
I remember seeing that.
And Samford, so we may be the second football game getting underway in that season, and more than likely the only game in the state of Georgia. So I hope we'll be having a little bit of publicity around that and be able to get some people to come on up. And if you want to watch college football, there's only one place to do it, up in Waleska. But guys, this is kind of the dead season. Again, I'm John Morgan with Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. We are together on Moss, the last three guys to do a podcast. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in, listening to us. A reminder, we'll have John Nelson on next week. Mr. Nelson is going to talk about Atlanta United, and he just wrapped up his tour of South Georgia, doing his high school previews about them, and I want to get his take on what he saw, as also high school football is getting ready to kick off here in Georgia. I believe the Corky Kell games are going to be that weekend as well. That is the preliminary kickoff. They might even be a little bit earlier, but I think they are the weekend of the 23rd and 24th. A couple of venues for Corky Kell, again, up in Rome, Barron Stadium, and down at Georgia State Stadium. They'll have games as well. And Georgia State, again, taking over from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The Benz used to be the home of the high school football championship, but nothing really ever worked right. They tried 2 years to get those games in there. There were hitches galore. 2 years ago, there was a snowstorm. Only two games got underway, and they were forced to go to campus sites for the following week to that because the dorm was booked. And then last year, it was the MLS Cup taking precedence at the Georgia Dome, forced the high school games to go Wednesday and Thursday. And again, that was a solution that also didn't please many people, didn't please the fans because they would have to get off work, didn't please the coaches, didn't please the players. Well, probably pleased the players who won anyway. They were probably pleased. But now, in an effort to prevent all that, they moved it across the cityscape to Georgia State Stadium for that. It's going to be definitely a big feather in Georgia State's cap, definitely raising their awareness as well about how high school football operates, and definitely gives them some publicity. Top kids in the state are going to be visiting their facilities. They're going to get a look at the new locker rooms, get a look at the new strength area, and it's definitely a good recruiting tool for the Panthers. We'll see whether or not that translates into an increase in the class that comes in for next season. But again, my only thing is it's going to be outside, and while you are definitely going to be at the mercy of the elements, so if it's like a 30 degree day and it's and wind blowing, even though there's no snow, even though it's just a cold rain, it's going to make conditions absolutely miserable to play that game in. And you just basically, I think that the GHSA is rolling the dice in moving them there with the weather.
You mean for the December?
For the December game.
Yeah.
They're rolling the dice with the weather, because at least at the Georgia Dome, at least in Mercedes-Benz, if the weather is awful, but you can still move around. As long as there's no snow, you can get down there, have great conditions. But now you're going to be in the elements, and you're just I'm just saying the GHSA hasn't had much luck when it comes to risking the weather. And now here they are, their biggest stage is all dependent on the weather. And I just believe that it's going to come back and bite them. But again, that is not, we'll discuss that as we get going into the high school season. I saw that Yahoo, I think it was either Yahoo or Google, put out the list of best high school program in each state. And Georgia, I thought it was a bit of a surprise, they listed the Marietta Blue Devils getting the nod in that category. And it'll be interesting to see if Marietta is now the hype du jour team as we hit into the 2019 high school football season. Again, we'll be with you next week. I'll be calling in as we'll be speaking with Mr. Nelson. We'll be off on the 11th, and then we'll get right back into our football coverage on August 18th, previewing those games. And again, we'll be up at Reinhardt broadcasting live, either on Twitter or Facebook, or on YouTube, with so you can watch our preview, ask us questions, interact. We'd love to interact with you, and we'll be sure to keep watching and listening to this program, and we'll have more details about that as we go along. All right, enough talk about football. Let's talk a little baseball. The MLB trading deadline is fast approaching. The Atlanta Braves, they're six games up on the Washington Nationals, heading into a big series in the nation's capital starting Monday, but the Braves just got a couple of bad news. A lot of good players heading to the disabled list. Nick Markakis, Dansby Swanson, they're going to miss significant time with, I believe, a foot injury in Dansby's case.
It is.
And Markakis had a wrist injury.
Yeah, he got hit on the wrist Friday, I believe it was.
So, guys, the Braves are hitting a little bit of a rough patch with the injuries. Do they have enough of a cushion on Washington to be able to withstand this, or they're going to have to become buyers in the trade market?
Well, I don't know if they have to become buyers. I would like for them to. They don't need to boost their hitting.
Right.
Let's just put it that way. But at the same time, I'm still concerned about the pitching and getting in deep into the seventh inning, into the eighth inning, and getting that middle relief pitching. I would like to bring a middle relief guy in. You know, doesn't matter where you get him from. I just need a good middle relief guy who could come in and pitch you some good innings there. But that hitting is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
When anytime you got Freeman, Acuna Jr., and Ozzy Albies hitting the way you do, and Josh Donaldson, who would have ever thought that Josh Donaldson would have the season that he's having over there at third base for Atlanta, right?
Yeah, he's been really good for them.
Very good for them. Brian McKenzie's also been pretty good for him, too. An ageless veteran, I guess you can say for him now. Charlie Culberson's hitting it. He's coming into his thing. Dansby Swanson, who I've been very impressed with this year. I mean, this team is just coming together hitting wise.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll be fine, but this series is so important to them. If they can get, what is this, a three game series? If this is a three game series,
I think it is a three game series.
Yeah,
yes.
If this is a three game series and you at least get two out of the three, now you've given yourself a cushion, because the Phillies are struggling. The Phillies did get a win over us today, but the Phillies are struggling. They're not, their pitching is god awful. It's worse, it's awful.
Yeah, it's worse than ours.
Yeah, and I think it's probably the worst in the National League. So when you have that situation going on, the Nationals are not who we thought they were. You know what I'm saying? So Atlanta can do this, but remember, this is a 162 game schedule. We've already played 101 games. Okay, so that means there's still 61 games left.
So another third left.
Another third left. When you look around Major League Baseball, the only team there, well, really two teams. There are really only two teams that you can say, okay, well, let's go on and give this division to them, and that's the Dodgers and the Astros. The Astros, I believe, now are up 7 in the West, and the last time I checked, the Dodgers were up 14 games.
Yes.
And we knew that what the Dodgers were going to be.
Yeah, they were going to run away with it.
They were going to run away from with that division from day one. And that division has become a bit weak.
See, the Dodgers' problem is okay when they get to the playoffs. You got your ace, who, you know, he's great. He's good money during the season.
Right.
But when Mr. Kershaw gets to the playoffs, he, you know, I'm going to refer to my favorite guy, Phillip Rivers. He turns into Phillip Rivers. Or he just forgets how to pitch. I'm like, man, so.
But Atlanta, I think, just like every other team that's in divisional races or in the wild card races, I think Atlanta's going to try to make a move.
Oh, they're going to have to make a move on some pitching.
Yeah.
Period. If you guys trying to make that good October push.
And guess who's out there? Guess who's going to be available for trade?
Noah Syndergaard. Yeah. Right, Syndergaard. But now the latest word I've seen is that the Padres are making a serious push.
We're going to try to get that man.
Yeah,
because the Mets act like they don't know what to do with him. You know, so you know, let's send him out west. You know, and as a Padre fan, I'm still I have a special place in my heart about Atlanta. Because we just hooked y'all up during the 90s.
You did.
Oh, my God.
You really did.
Yes.
I got a special bug about you guys.
Thank you so much.
You guys got all the players. So, yeah, go on and send Mr. Snygaard. Go on and send him out west for a little while. You know, there's other pitchers available for you guys.
Looking at the division, Braves are 5.5 up on Washington. Astros are 8.5 up. The Twins are 2 games. The Twins were actually like 8-9 games up a month ago, and Cleveland has caught them. The Yankees have a comfortable lead in the American League East. They're 8 games ahead of Boston and Tampa Bay. Going into the National League West is 14.5 still for the Dodgers. And the NL Central, which they do this every single year. They beat up on each other every year.
Oh, yeah.
The Cubs and Cardinals are in first place, and Milwaukee's 1 game back. And the Reds are 7 back. So, I mean, this is the National League in itself is going to be crazy. You look at the wild card standings, mm-hmm. Cleveland is ahead on the first wild card thing with 3.5 to go. But then it's a three-way tie between Boston, Oakland, and Tampa Bay. And then in the National League, it's a three-way tie for at the top, really. The Cubs, Cardinals, and Nationals are at the top. And the Phillies and Brewers are a game behind. The Giants are 2.5 back. Arizona's still in the thick of things at 3.5 back. And then you got the Mets at 6. And the Padres, like you said, the Padres are going to make a run for Noah Syndergaard.
Yeah, but that was my next question to you. I mean, you're listening to all these teams. You're not listening to San Diego. So why are they making a move for Syndergaard?
That's a good question.
Unless they want to package him and send him somewhere else for prospects.
I think they feel like they can, yeah, well, that too. But I think they feel like 7 games behind, they could make a run.
Okay.
I think they feel that way.
And we will give the Mets Luis Urias.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll give you a starting second baseman in exchange for your pitcher if we try and make that push. So, you know, it kind of is what it is. But speaking of, you know, you have the Twins are trying to make a, you know, they're trying to make some pitching adjustments.
Yeah,
as
watch
well.
Watch them. Watch the Twins in the trade deadline.
Absolutely, because they're trying to eye Sergio Romo.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, but the Sergio Romo have what he had back in San Francisco too. You know, that's the question for him. Does he still have that same stuff?
Yeah, they're willing to find out. I mean, you know, like lightning can strike twice. Anything is possible.
That's true. And another thing I see about the Braves, again, you talk about all this young talent that's been coming up from the pipeline at Gwinnett. But now that we got the case of Austin Riley, and as soon as he hits a slump, I mean, the pitchforks come out. And I think in Austin's case, it's like, okay, he can hit fastballs. Now they're showing him something different, a curveball or a slider, something that he's not ready for. And once it starts working, everyone's going to jump on. And then, boom, the pitchforks come out, and they're saying he's a bust. Can't we just, if we have an irate opinion, can we just stay off Twitter for a while?
Yeah, yes. No, I agree with that, John.
I mean, this
guy's a rookie.
Right.
He is not Bryce Harper. Okay, Bryce Harper's been in the league, what, 7-8 years?
Right.
He's still a 227 career batter. Come on, be serious here. Riley just has been seeing a lot of fastballs and just hasn't been able. That was the problem with Jason Hayward.
Right.
Remember, Jason Hayward swung for the fences.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to do everything they could to fix his adjustments. And, I mean, he was striking out all over the place.
Right.
And they were ready to say, oh, Hayward's
pull
nothing.
The plug.
They were ready to pull the plug on him.
And they sent him to Chicago, which probably is the best thing that ever happened to him.
It revived his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and come on, man. You have to give this kid a chance.
Because they were calling Jason Hayward at one point in time. He was like, you know, Hank Aaron was talking to him and everything.
Yeah.
You know, and then once he started, you know, he hit that slump.
Once you get the hype train going, and once you hit the slump, everybody's gets on you, you know. They build you up and then they tear you down, and it's just, you know, I wish it wasn't the case, but people just need an arena to vent, it seems like. And unfortunately, because everything's all interconnected, social media is pervasive, the people we're venting against can hear it, and it kind of gets into their heads. And it's at one point you got to, like, okay, you got to stay off social media, but then PR people, they want you on social media so you can interact with the fans, but it's just this, it's just a very crazy, mixed up kind of symbiotic relationship going on. It's kind of like, I think, the same thing with Tiger Woods. Even though when he kept playing well, he kept hitting all these tournaments, doing well, the hype machine kicked in, and I think eventually he broke under it. And I think a lot of people will do that.
Which
and
happens, yeah.
It happens. And
I think Tiger was living his best life with all those groupies.
Well, that's part of it, yeah.
Got the better of him. Love is going to get you.
That's part of it, right.
It took him like 10 years to win another major.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My goodness. That was a large. That was like he had a whole decade worth
of
slump.
But you have to go through that kind of that kind of adversity. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And that's what it takes. It takes to go through that, man.
And it's, I'm sorry, but if you cheat on Lindsey Vonn, you've got to be the biggest idiot in the world.
I second that. I am sorry.
I am sorry.
Lindsey Vonn's a looker.
Yes.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
So anyway, John Morgan, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton, last three guys to do a podcast. We are getting close to the end, so we're going to just start to wrap things up. 60 seconds about things you may have missed, kind of flown under the radar for the past week here in the Metro Atlanta area. Again, we're just getting ready for the Falcons getting going. I mentioned Reinhardt. However, there is one more. I was looking through the schedule. There is a team that is going to beat the Eagles in the state of Georgia in terms of playing a football game. Yes, there is a team that's going to beat them, and it will be the Georgia Military College Bulldogs, the only team in the state of Georgia that plays football at the JUCO level.
Wow.
They will have a game August 22nd against Navarro College, and the Bulldogs have a very the problem with the Bulldogs is that there is not a lot of teams playing JUCO in their area, so they have to really get creative in terms of filling out the schedule. They play at Nassau Community College. Now, I assume that's New York, but it might be Nassau, Bahamas, in which case I want to go to that game, too.
Me, too.
Northwestern Oklahoma A&M, they play a couple of ASA teams, Brooklyn, Miami, College of DuPage, Community Christian, Arkansas Baptist, Lackawanna, Hawking College. This is a team that has got to – it's not easy for the Bulldogs to put together a schedule, and you got to give these guys a lot of credit for being able to persevere in a demanding sport like football, when it just it's just so cost intensive, because you figure you got to pay about 10 coaches, you got to pay strength people, you got to bring in strength equipment, you got to pay for helmets, you got to pay for jerseys, you got to pay for shoulder pads, and that expense is from 50 to 80. You got to pay for cleats, laundry equipment, because boy, these things get dirty and they stink to high heaven. You got to pay a food bill. It's not cheap to feed these guys.
No, it's not.
It is a very cost intensive enterprise. And I remember about 10 years ago, West Georgia Technical College over in Carrollton was flirting with the idea of a college football. They hired a coach. They got facilities all together. They were ready to go. But then, because of the cost, it just exploded on them. They pulled the plug on that enterprise. They pulled it before a game was even played. So you got to give the Bulldogs credit for sticking it out when everything is against them. And Georgia Military College gets my respect for hanging around as long as they have and putting together a very competitive environment, especially as I mentioned at the outset of these remarks, everything just seems to be against them in terms of scheduling and getting that. Now, also, players aren't easy to come by as well, because they're getting people who pretty much can't even get. They're getting people who can't get into the four-year schools, or maybe flunked out of the four-year schools, like a Last Chance U program. This is Last Chance for Last Chance. This is the Last Chance for people who can't even get into Last Chance. These are the guys who, again, it's a lot of determination to stay with it, a lot of perseverance, and I give them all sorts of credit for hanging around as long as they have. So hats off to the Georgia Military College Bulldogs and your head coach, Burt Williams. Hopefully you guys can have a good season. And again, it starts off August 22nd in Milledgeville. They take on Navarro College. All right, Leon, you're up.
Well, I want to touch on the issue of, tampering.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
Is there any way for the NFL to possibly curb tampering? Well, according to Mr. James Dolan, he went on, I believe it was March, back in March.
Mm-hmm.
He went off and said that there would be a number of top-tier free agents that would be landing on his team. Now, the question of tampering came up, but then when June 30th rolled around, no players actually went to know. Well, at least he got Julius Randle. But as far as the top-tier free agents that he predicted would land on the Knicks, did not occur. But for some strange reason, right around June 30th, 6 p.m., I just find it hard to believe that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant just came to the conclusion magically that they were both going to land on the Brooklyn Nets. Could it be possible that they violated the CBA and were discussing this prior to June 30th? You can't prove it.
Right.
Yeah. You're right. You can't prove it.
You can't prove it.
Not at all.
So when the NBA says, did you talk contract details before 6 p.m. to start free agency? You know what the team officials are going to say?
No.
No.
Unless you have a wire, you can't prove it.
Can't prove it. When Kawhi Leonard seemingly bamboozled the world, I'm going to take a page out of Skip Bayless and Big Shannon's book, and he kind of so-said everybody. was there any kind of discussion with him and other major top-tier superstars prior to him going to the Clippers? You can't prove it.
Right.
So my thing is, now the NBA is going to the point where, hey, we're losing a lot of money in these trades. Free agency you can't do anything about. But the trades, the Paul George situation, that right there cost Oklahoma City some money. Mm-hmm. Think to yourself, well, these people have billions, but yes, but also millions are invested into their teams. For example, jersey sales. Now there's about a whole lot of OKC Thunder jerseys that have Paul George's name under the PG-13 that will have to be put on eBay for on the clearance rack.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
The same goes for Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
The same goes for the Houston Rockets and Chris Paul. So, at the end of the day, it's creating a bit of a economic leak within the NBA. But question has to be asked. You know, because now they're investigating Uncle Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying Uncle Dennis may have been influential, a little overly influential, in Kawhi landing on the Clippers. That was there possibly incentives of maybe a package deal lined up? Possibly, but you can't prove it. So this is the question. Will this lead to a strike? Will the owner strike back? Or will the NBA be investigating this into gratuity? The future is limitless.
All right, Daniel.
So I hate to be a downer, but I think this has to be said and it has to be addressed. So in boxing, it really hasn't been a great week for boxing, although we did see a pretty decent fight between Manny Pacquiao and Keith Thurman. But there were also two fatalities in boxing. Argentinian junior welterweight Hugo Alfredo Santillan, he died 10 days ago on Thursday from injuries he suffered in one of his bouts. And then 4 days after that, Russia's Maxim Dadashev, he succumbed to his injuries he suffered that next day, but he died that Monday. Now, the sad part about Maxim's situation was that I'm not sure if it was his wife or his girlfriend. I don't know if he married her or whatnot, but he was actually fighting to get his license here in the States so that he can bring his wife and his kid over. And now all of a sudden, you know, his wife and his kid has to come over to bury him. I think this kind of raises a concern about boxing. Like, what do you do? Because it's funny, because in UFC, there's not been a fatality reported in the UFC. And if I'm not mistaken, their gloves are lighter than boxing. You know,
it's three rounds though.
Yeah, that's true. Boxing's 3 rounds, like 5 12. Minutes. Yeah. Boxing's 12. And remember, at one point of time, boxing was 15 rounds. They actually reduced that
because from of 15 a fatality. 12
because of a fatality. It was Ray Boom Boom Mancini, who killed Dooku Kim in the ring in 1982. So that was the fatality that actually caused it. I mean, we've seen a lot of fatalities in boxing. They said, according to Ring Magazine, in 1953, I believe it was, 53 fatalities were reported.
So, yeah, Ray Robinson killed a man in the ring before.
Yeah, and Ray Robinson was part of that as well. What do you do here? Do you go back to wearing the helmets? Do you reduce or do you up in the gloves to more ounces to the gloves? What do you do to actually solve this kind of problem that we're having with it? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I mean, I don't know what could be the case. And I would only bring this up because if I didn't, my son is 16 and I take him to boxing Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, and he loves it. But, you know, the one thing that I have to kind of fight with is my wife and everybody else who understands that this is a physical sport here. And, you know, I mean, truth be told, they probably don't like him doing it because of the physicality of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that she tells him, she says, don't get hit. just don't get hit at all. Like, it's not supposed to happen. He will get hit, right? But don't get hit, you know. So, I mean, it raises a concern. And the question is, like, what do you do? Like, what do you do? What do you do to make a violent sport like boxing safe? And I don't know how you can do that.
Well, we've had this conversation about football many times.
Exactly.
And not only that.
And hockey, too.
And hockey, too. But now I've seen they're actually getting evidence of CTE in people's brains who don't have a history of professional sports.
Professional sports.
So right. If that's the case, then what? Do you just live in a hamster ball for the rest of your life?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Do you just go for which?
There's just a line that if you go too far, life suddenly becomes not worth living.
Right. And I just want to end it by sending my condolences out to Santillan and Dadashev's family for that.
And the three of us here at Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast do as well. Wish help them and theirs. Are able to recover from this unspeakable tragedy and are able to have at least some type of life afterwards. Well, that's going to wrap us up here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. I'm John Morgo alongside Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton. I will not be in the studio next week. It'll be my end of summer, early fall vacation, getting my head ready for football, getting into that football mindset of calling games for Reinhardt and at the high school level. So I will not be here. I will be calling in. Also calling in will be John Nelson from Soccer Down South and Georgia Public Broadcasting. He just made a pilgrimage to South Georgia, talked to all the schools, and he will get, and we will have his input on what the stories of the high school game in South Georgia will offer us. That is a, because they, we think we take high school football seriously in the North. It's nothing compared to the way they take it in the South, and we'll get our first look at South Georgia high school football next week on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. Appreciate your listenership. Again, if you have a comment, hit us up on Twitter, John_Morgo, and I think we'll have a new Twitter account starting next week, so I want to be able to promote that and let you guys hit start following that account as well. Everything Last Three Guys Do a Podcast on that Twitter account. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell your bus driver, tell anyone, your Uber, your Lyft driver. Tell them all about The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, the source for Atlanta sports. We have all of the breaking news, and we'll have it for you in 7 days. So for everyone involved, I'm John Morgo, alongside Daniel Bolton and Leon Brown. We will see you in 7 days, signing off for The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast.